Hey everybody, I am so happy to be here with you and happy to have recorded this episode with my brother, Connor Habib, the creator of the podcast Against Everyone with Connor Habib and the author of Hawk Mountain. The focus is on Connor's fantastic podcast season, How to Live Beyond. And we are disrupting materialism together about, everything in this episode, including psychedelics, anthroposophy, wellness, and more. How do we move beyond trends, which may seem based in new research or ancient methods, to what is needed now? Where do psychedelics, magic, nature, and AI fit in with this moment in our human evolution? Are they liberating or are they old forms in disguise? We talk about this and many more things throughout the episode, and I think it really illuminates how critically Connor thinks about all the issues of our time from every side possible, and you'll get to hear that throughout. On March 11th, Connor's offering a workshop with Rachel True and Sarah Marie Griffin called The Mysteries of the Tarot, How and Why to Read the Cards. Now, I've been to some of Connor's workshops on tarot, and they're really wonderful, deep, beautiful, and super fun. So if you'd like to check out this workshop, go to ConnorHabib.com or check out his Instagram feed. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, for sharing it with other people, and for following it. And to follow it, you just press that little plus sign up in the corner on whatever app you're using. I have so appreciated the messages you've been sending me on Facebook and Instagram and via email about our journey over here to Scotland and our imminent return to California and all of your journeys, the amazing stories you've sent me. Thank you so much. They're so encouraging and beautiful. And please keep in touch. Send more. Send them anytime. Welcome to That Good May Become with me, Laura Scappaticci, where we learn to illuminate the esoteric in our everyday lives. Hey, Connor.
Hi, Laura.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in your same time zone, which is like exquisitely beautiful to me. So won't be for long, but it's still amazing to be here right now. Okay. So I'm not sure if I'm finished with the Divine Feminine Masculine series yet, but I did two kind of one-off episodes, one about speech and speech work that I don't know at the very end, the woman, Debbie Spitalnik, I do the speech exercise with her, and then she like tells me something about myself from doing the speech exercise. And I was like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I'm working on. And then the next episode I did was a solo episode about all the transition that's happening here. And I was like, wait a minute, all of this has to do with Connor's last season, which is, how to live. And I thought maybe we could just talk about that whole season and what that was like for you and why you did it. And obviously it started in the new year, but can you just talk about why don't we know how to live? Like, what is that?
Yeah. I mean, so the first, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The first five episodes of 2023 are part of a series of episodes called How to Live Beyond. And like in 2022, I did a How to Live series. And so I did a bunch of episodes that were just sort of a little more practical, a little more honed in on one theme. Whereas usually I'm having these these conversations that go wherever they want to go. And then I kind of title them afterwards with whatever guest. But this time I was like a bit more focused on certain things. So the reason why I did it this year again, and added the beyond aspect, was to look into the many sort of spiritual and philosophical techniques, outlooks, whatever, that we use in our lives, but that we're really to leave behind and bring something new forward out of the soil that they've created, to tend to something or to grow something in that soil rather than just sort of clinging to the past. I think, so for instance, I talked about the New Age movement with Mitch Horowitz. I talked about psychedelics and magic with Lisa Romero, money magic, abundance thinking with Pilar Lesko, the wellness industry with Faria Reishin, and then nature itself, but also specifically nature worship with David Spangler. And all of these have given us a lot in our lives and have definitely helped move us from one stage of understanding the world to another. But now, if we approach them the wrong way, or we sort of rely on them too heavily, they drive us deeper into the problems that we're facing. And they're not really up to the challenges that we're facing now, and they won't move us forward on their own. And that's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people, because a lot of people are just discovering psychedelics, for instance, because Michael Pollan and Graham Hancock are, you know, becoming huge and, you know, presenting that everybody should do them. A lot of people are just coming into a kind of ecological consciousness or abundance thinking, whatever. And so I think it can be a little rough, especially if you found something that you like and you want to just sort of use it and you're learning from it. But I think I, you know, I tried to explore all of them compassionately and not to shame or condemn anyone for using them, but just to create a deeper discussion about each one.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't hear any shame or any condemnation. I think what you always do is just look at things really critically and from all different angles and perspectives to find the good in it and the truth in it and what's there for us right now, as you're saying. You know, it's I don't know. I am especially triggered by the psychedelics one. Not because I'm a proponent of psychedelics, but because like I have, you know people that just like sprinkle it on their cereal in the morning kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's hard for me. I also like in general have a hard time with anything that's any kind of substance that alters. And so it's just good to hear it framed in like in the evolution of who we are and where the place was for it or is for it and how maybe that's shifting now. Can you talk about that one a little bit more? I don't know. That's a trigger one.
That's a very popular one right now. And interestingly, a lot of people are on the one hand talking about how liberatory or liberating it is to do entheogens like ayahuasca, ibogaine, microdosing, you know, all that sort of stuff, or even just, you know, pot gummy bears or whatever. But so on the one hand, there are a lot of people in occult and spiritual circles and New Age circles and even just sort of you know, meditative headspace app circles are really into that. And on the other hand, and saying how it will set us free and, you know, bring us to next, you know, stage and where we need to be. And then on the other hand, it's like you have plenty of, you know, billionaires and millionaires and tech people, Silicon Valley people just doing these drugs, talking about them more than anybody on a big platform and just using them to explain away or justify bad decisions and continue doing what they've been doing all along. I mean, I think there's a big disconnect in what's actually happening with them and what they're supporting and what, you know, and what people think is happening. So, you know, in anthroposophical terms, you would say that that's luciferic, but I think, you know, just to add a little bit of that, you know, compassionate part, I do think that there are people whose life path and destiny is related to these substances. And so one, I don't want to condemn any of them, but I think that they're much fewer than people think they are. And then I also think that people, if they just want to experiment or play around with them, like, okay, I mean, I don't think it's great to do that, but you know, some people need to do that to express and, you know, their own sense of spirit, and also to create challenges for themselves to overcome, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm. So I do think that, you know, the freedom for people to do them is a higher principle than whether or not they're good. But especially since a lot of people have been doing them lately, that kind of dimension or layer of the experience is becoming just like a giant tourist attraction. And what happens to a town or a place when it becomes crowded with tourists all at once? I mean, it loses what it used to be.
Right.
And actually, you know, then people start creating like the, you know, off the beaten track guides and all that kind of stuff, where people have to go in to these very narrow passageways or these different contours to even access what was thought to be there in the first place, and which probably isn't really there in the same way anymore. I mean, these are very old in a lot of ways. What do I want to say? The old techniques. And that means that they've had plenty of time to be invaded and intruded upon and changed over time. And so thinking that we're also sort of touching something that's deeply old and therefore good, it could be the opposite. It could be, you know, like what needs to be happening there is something that is new and unknown to us, rather than what we think we know about it.
I mean, a couple things there. I think it's interesting to think about, oh yeah, like maybe this ancient medicine isn't actually ancient in the way that it's being, you know, sought out and used right now. And then,
or the medicine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Or medicine. Exactly. Yeah. also, like, do you remember being in high school and do you remember like the straight edge kids? Like,
yeah.
Like you, my friend Justin Kishpa, he was straight edge when I met him at college, and he had, you know, the big, like you would get like a Sharpie and put like a big X on your hand. And I feel like I'm like a straight edge kid, but
yeah.
And it's kind of hard to like, I'm of course, like anything with an extreme is challenging for me. So I wouldn't be straight edge. I'd be like mostly straight edge, a little bit curvy, but
just a forward slash on your hand.
Yeah. Just one. Yeah. Like one and a half, like a Y. It would look like a lowercase Y. Anyway. Yeah. I'm just thinking about like that movement and that Jennifer Egan book, A Visit from the Goon Squad. I remember at the end of that book that you told me to read, it's like in the future, the near future, and all the kids that are growing up, they have like no tattoos, they don't do any substances, they're like all just super, they just want to be clean. Like I just thought it was such an interesting thing to set that in the near future. And what I don't know if literature predicts or it senses, but I was kind of interested in that picture. Where do you think it's going? Like, what do you think's going to happen? Do you think it'll have a little crumble down or what?
I mean, I think probably the AI, so-called AI movement, because most of it's not really AI, but most of that AI singularity movement and the psychedelic movement will probably really just merge together. I mean, I think people think that they're opposing forces, but I think that they're actually just seeking deeper and deeper kind of alliances. And I think that's...
Say that again.
I think a lot of people think they're sort of opposing movements, but they're actually just sort of seeking deeper and deeper alliances with each other, as evidenced by all the Silicon Valley, you know, tech bro people that are doing these drugs, but also the kind of... novelty-based, colorful imagery being created by, you know, art-generating tech, which people are calling AI, but it's not AI. And And, you know, the kinds of experiences that people are seeking when they do entheogens, I think that there's a sort of key in there. And I think what will happen is, you know, the idea that, well, maybe you can, well, I, you know, actually, I don't want to make any predictions, but I would just say that, like, there's an alliance there that is not really being looked at deeply enough by the people who think that these substances are leading us to the right place. Mm-hmm. It's hard to talk about this stuff because I think some people have had really liberatory and beautiful experiences with these. But it's important to remember that, like video games, like some of these, you know, mock AI technologies, they're mostly working in a kind of subnatural way right now, that they rely on our organs to create a picture of a spiritual or transcendent state. So when you put on VR glasses, for instance, or whatever, you know, people are like, oh, you can be anything, you can see a different world, you can whatever. It's like, yeah, but you're still using your senses to see something that's not there. With entheogens, you're using reactive properties of your internal organs to access a certain contour of the spiritual world and thinking that you're in it, that you have sort of achieved a certain state of consciousness that allows you to relate to it properly. So I think, you know, and it's the same with like seances as a sort of old way of doing it. And there's so many comparisons between seances and technology now, which is really interesting to me. And magic and technology now, where you think you're accessing something and it's not as if there's not some truth there, but the ability to interpret what's happening is almost completely destroyed by the spectacle of what's happening.
Okay. I mean, thank you for breaking it down and just illuminating that maybe there are these connections there that we're not really thinking of. And I think, you know, it's like you said, you don't want to make predictions, but you're looking at forces at work and how those forces are aligned, I would say. That's kind of what I see happening there.
I mean, there's just a lot of that going on right now. I mean, so there's, you know, this whole group of people and probably some people who listen to your podcast and my podcast who, you know, for instance, are going on and on about the Great Reset and the World Economic Forum and how terrible that is. And, you know, and you know, while at the same time, like, and they think that they're fighting this sort of like tech-based world, but at the same time, they're generally accessing very modernist tendencies of, you know, good and evil. And what works more like the zeros and ones of the binary codes of computers than yes, no.
Right. Good bad. Evil. Yep.
You know, spirituality versus, God versus the devil. Right perspective, wrong perspective. That actually is algorithmic thinking that is exactly like the enemy that those people are proposing to fight. And so they're its missionaries without realizing it. And so it becomes it becomes very tricky to be able to see even who's helping you and what you're fighting for if you don't have a real spiritual perspective. And that's part of the How to Live Beyond series, is like, these old tools aren't going to cut it. They're not going to get you there. There might be aspects of them that are helpful that we need to bring forward, but they're not going to get you there.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think, okay, so it's sort of like, beware the binary.
That's part of it. Sure. I mean, that's there, which is part of why, you know, trans people are so threatening so many people, trans and non-binary people. Not all trans people are non-binary, but even trans people who are non-binary are shattering the concept of the binary, whether they want to or not.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm not saying that they're doing that consciously or that they even want to do that, but I mean, they're still threatening to people who are in the binary, you know, mm-hmm. thinking. Mm-hmm. So
I guess, you know, how to live beyond, like, if there's a tip for people like sensing into the world right now, it's like, at least this is how I would take it. It's like, okay, if I find myself on one side or another in any of these things really strongly on one side or another, right? Don't be straight edge. have a little more fluidity there to try to understand the forces at work rather than the being against or for a concept or a thing or an action. Like, just have a greater picture. How do you hold that in yourself? I mean, I think because, you know, you're an intellectual and a creative, like, you're naturally doing that. But is there like a capacity, a way to develop that sensitivity to, ooh, I'm in a groove here. I'm in on one side or the other. And how do I reset that? Like,
I mean, a big part of that is just not locating the center of real event in material conditions. It's not forgetting them either, but when you pay more attention to who you be, to put it in Pilar-Lesko's colloquialisms, you know, who you be, then you get a different result. So, like, I mean, it's, you know, Rudolf Steiner, someone said, you know, can I get divorced, you know, after I get married? And he kind of, it was like sort of, you can, there's enough exclamation points there that you feel like he's kind of lost his patience, or he's like, you know, get married, get divorced. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you think about what you're doing, you know? And I'm sure people had just asked him for advice on every single thing. And like, the underlying advice is be with the experience. And, you know, that's tricky too, because someone could misinterpret that as, you know, it's all part of my process. But the truth is, you know, different aspects of what we do and our processes and our journeys can damage us, can mess with our karma and hurt other people, and actually slow down the world, the constitutive and cosmic forces that are, you know, with us to help us and to be with us. And it's not all excusable by talking about, this is my journey, this is what I want, but it's still better to be with it than to do it and not be with it at all. And so sometimes all we can do is just be with it and observe and try to consider afterwards. But in the meantime, we work on developing ourselves, you know, real spiritual development rather than self-development, or in addition to self-development, I should say. And then, you know, it's less likely that we'll make those damaging decisions or choices. But a lot of it also has to do with going forward rather than going backward. And I think that this is, you know, like, again, that's the point of the series, but it is my sort of big, you know, observation for 2023, is that a lot of people are, you know, some people are moving forward and they're not afraid of the dramatic shifts in identity or untying knots that bind them to the past, or getting the hooks out of their field or whatever you want to call it. But there are a lot of people who are clinging to old conflicts or old audiences, old platforms, old gestures, old relationships, and they're paralyzing others with their past and dead enthusiasms. And I think this is really hard, because a lot of people that look like they're doing a good thing are not doing a good thing. They're holding on. And they're trying to reclaim or get back something that they had that made them feel good, or trying to hold on to it for dear life, because they're afraid to move forward with their lives. So a lot of people who I really love and respect in the public sphere some artists and creators, personalities, that sort of thing, you know, I'll see them doing the same thing that they've done for the past 5 years or 10 years, or the thing that got them to the place where they are, or the thing that they thought, you know, really helped them develop, and they're not moving forward. And it's actually very bad for them and for everybody else. And I think that's, again, that's very difficult. But a big part of that also is, are they aware that that's happening, or are they not aware that that's happening? Usually I would say, like, a lot, you know, a lot of them are not even aware it's happening.
Right.
But if they can be aware, in some ways it's worse because they're still doing it even though they're aware. But in other ways, they're creating an aperture for themselves, you know, and a new light is made available that, you know, eventually they can walk into.
Okay. I have like three questions. I want to come back to this spiritual development versus self-development. Mm. And I feel like I've heard Lisa talk about this a bit too. And then I think, yeah, maybe these people aren't aware, but I feel like Fariha, Rasheen, can you just talk about your experience with her? Because I know for you, it like moved something in you, because she, I think, is one of those people that is not, that is moving forward, that is like coming into this next space where it's aligned with her and then aligned with what's needed next. I mean, they all are, all these guests, but I know there was something that happened for you in there with her.
Yeah. I mean, Fariha's great. Fariha, you know, I didn't really know her. She was a friend of a friend, and he told me to read her book, and I did, which is called Who Is Wellness For? And it's just about, you know, the ways the wellness industry, including meditation and, you know, eating certain kinds of diets and so on and so forth, how they are really hooked into a certain kind of materialism, but also, you know, colonialism and racism and carceral and punitive justice systems and so forth. And it's pretty mind expanding. I, you know, there's a lot in that book that I'm not on board with as well, which is interesting because, you know, on my show, I try not to disagree with other people, you know, when
except
they come
me.
On my show.
No.
What's that?
Except me. Well, I don't come on your show, but I'm
yeah. Yeah. I just come onto your show to disagree with you.
That's right.
But
that's
no,
right.
I try to just have a resonance with the guest, and then, you know, it's so much more productive. But some of the things that we have resonance on, I mean, they're just really profound for me to see someone who was, you know, fairly young and had sort of lived in a similar life to mine in certain ways, really just getting it and being unafraid to put it out there where she's at with as much integrity as she has, which included, you know, her saying things like, you know, if you are mystifying without engagement, it's a silencing tactic, which I found very profound, you know, because people have done that to spirituality, sex work, all sorts of things. It included her sort of asserting her right to be deepening her connection with God. And if there wasn't space for that in leftist politics, then leftist politics needed to catch up. Because she generally has leftist politics.
Yeah.
It included her saying things like, you know, she needed to think about not only the harm that was done to her, but the harm that she's done to others. And if there's not enough space to talk about the way that people harm others, then we just become a culture of consumer and consumed victims. You know, she talked about astrology. She talks about, I mean, she just really puts it out there. And that's a pretty tremendous act of affirmation of the spirit. And so I was just so moved by her in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So in herself and able to, I mean, I think that really courageous and like, this is me. And these are the, well, some, again, these sort of back to the binary structures, like this doesn't fit. So we can't talk about victimhood without whom I've victimized. You know, we can't talk about the left if they're, you know, only the right is supposed to have a connection to God, you know, that kind of thing. So just really, amazing. Okay. So to me, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Can we go back to that self-development and spiritual development picture for a minute? Like, what does that mean to you when you say that? For people listening, they're like, wait a minute, I thought those things were the same thing in some way. Or I think we definitely confound them a lot. And they are connected so beautifully. But can you say more?
Yeah, what's the... I mean, it's something that Rudolf Steiner said. I'm going to get it wrong. I've actually been corrected on saying this the wrong way. But it's something like, you know, for every step you take in gaining occult knowledge, take three steps to refining your personality.
To knowing yourself. I'm going to back to you. Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I think that that's a mistranslation as well. But
it's probably. It's in how to
for the final word. But I think basically the important thing to take away from that and why I bring that up is that he's making the distinction, right? And so, what might that experience of the distinction be for me? Self-development can often point us to spiritual development. And, you know, it's good, for instance, to take care of your body, whatever that means to you, so that spiritual life and development can unfold in your life without the interference of a body that's constantly breaking down in ways that you maybe could have done something about. Or to, you know, work on being kind to other people so you're not constantly having conflicts that cloud your ability to develop. But doing things like I meditate, you know, so I can be a better person at work, or doing things like I just need to take a walk on the beach to clear my head, or I'm doing cognitive behavioral therapy, or I'm going to therapy, or I'm, let's see, what's another good one?
I do all of these things.
Yeah. No. those are all worthwhile, but they're not spiritual development.
Right.
Spiritual development is aligning yourself with the will of God and the spiritual world, in your life, in your incarnation, and trying to line it up for the next one and the lifetime you'll have between those, to allow that to show in the world so that your actions are, or that your thoughts and your feelings and your actions are revelations of God. And that's quite different, because self-development can mean mediating or getting rid of suffering. Spiritual development can often bring great suffering. Self-development can mean changing the circumstances of your life to fit your desires. Spiritual development can mean allowing new desire, which is almost unbidden and alien, to flow through you from the spiritual world. It's getting what you do right with alignment to the spiritual world. And this may sound very vague. Like, it may be like, well, how do you know which is which? All I can say is that there's lots I can say, but the easiest way to say it is that you know. And maybe that's irritating to people to hear me say that. But it comes with just a completely different presence, in the same way that if I put a vase of flowers in front of you, it would be very different than if I put you in a tank with a dolphin. I mean, they're just completely different experiences.
Both very nice. Both yeah. very nice, depending on the dolphin. But yeah,
yeah.
both nice.
And the flowers, yeah.
And the flowers, right. But
lilies would be awful. But
yeah. Carnations would bring death. No. Yeah, I think that's that. I think that's actually a good way to explain it, is that they are two different experiences. And to, you know, walk that path to get there, to feel the distinction. I don't know. Joan of Arc is coming into my head right now, and I don't know, you know, what her experience was and where it was grounded or connected. But it's like, you know, I don't think we don't get impressions like that anymore in the same way, at least in Western culture, I would say. I was just reading the Steiner lecture about that. It's like you don't see people have like spiritual revelation, or the word of God in a church or something doesn't have the same effect generally. That's why you have a sermon, and then that arouses the intellect and gets into opinions. But you know, the way that we are initiated now is through each other. And I don't know how that quite connects, but if we can look at it, that maybe that's where the joining is in some way, and seeing each other and watching each other's spiritual path. Maybe that's sort of the self-development connection, and then the personal and inner work there, and the spiritual practices is the spiritual development. I don't know. I just went on a little walk down a road. Sure if that made sense or not.
Uh-huh.
But does feel different to me for sure, self-development and spiritual development.
It's just you know, and maybe I should spend a little more time thinking about how to articulate this.
Yeah,
but it is. Oh, thanks for agreeing with me on that.
I do.
But I. But I mean, I think, you know, I mean that they couldn't be more distinct in a way. And I think, you know, it in some ways it's the same. There's, you know, people often ask a question like, "How do you know that, you know, a spiritual presence is occurring to you and it's not just your thoughts?" Sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And the times that you don't, a lot of that is because you haven't done the work to be able to separate those out.
Right.
Sometimes people's self-development and spiritual development is going to overlap. I mean, self-development is always spiritual development in its way as well, which is also confusing, because when you're everything is spiritual development, but there's a difference between intentional spiritual development and not. Like, if you look at tragic moments of intensity in your life, those were moments of initiation in your life. But usually they were moments that weren't, where you weren't conscious of what was happening, where you were being sort of kicked in or brought into a different aspect of your life or a different level. And what, you know, it's good to ask, who would I have been in those moments had I been fully sort of spiritually aware and could have seen what was happening? Now, I'm not asking it. I'm not telling people that they're to blame or, you know, to just suck it up and be happy that all that happened. But, you know, take one in your life and just look at it and think, what would that experience have been like if I had recognized it as a spiritual development experience? Not to reconfigure it as good, because the spiritual world actually also, unfortunately for the way we live, doesn't really have too much of a regard for what hurts and what doesn't. That's our job.
Yeah.
That's not the job of the spiritual world. And that is a pain, literally and figuratively. Mm. But that's our task, is to work with and through that. Because you can't cut off an angel's hand, you know? And so the angel isn't going to understand what it's like to have that experience. So it's going to deliver to you what it needs to deliver in whatever form it needs to. And to the extent that we are in this incarnation in a way that is not awakened to that, we're going to experience something quite different than what is actually being given to us.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of an example of that just to make it maybe concrete for myself. It's like the first pregnancy I had, I miscarried. And then after that, I was so anxious. Like I had so much anxiety during my pregnancies. And I didn't miscarry after that, but I still like walked around like completely clenched up and nervous. Mm. Underneath it, I had this like, you know, ticker tape, whatever, running that was like, that was practice for your body. It was this kid saying, I'm not quite ready. I'm going to come next time. Give me a minute. Like I just, that didn't mm-hmm. work out. And then Renza was actually born basically on the conception date of that miscarriage that didn't work out. And so like, I had that spiritual, I could have just, that's the trick, right? Is to, at least for me, I often am carrying both pictures at once and to lean into the spiritual picture and to really like embody that and trust it is where the spiritual development becomes more active. And also like for me, now I know, you know, I was making this big decision about whether to leave school or not. It was so challenging. And because I think of my spiritual practice, I had this dream one night and I woke up from the dream and I was like, oh, and it was I had a physical sensation, which is a spiritual sensation for me. And it told me everything I needed to know. I was like, oh, there it is. That's I recognize that for my spiritual work. It's something that comes through me spiritually and it showed up here. And then that's basically what led me to the decision to leave school. I mean, I could have had so much static around it and I still did. Even the next day, I was like, I don't know if this is the right decision. And I was like, no, I got the spiritual information. Like that was very obvious to me. And I had done a spiritual practice the night before for clarity and boom, the answer showed right up. So I could have done a whole lot of other things to try to sort it out, but I had the answer. I just had to trust it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and it's discernment. And I only knew that because I had been practicing for years, right?
Uh-huh.
Comes with practice.
Yeah, I mean, it comes with practice, and then, you know, we have different ways of knowing as we practice as well,
right?
And yeah.
Well, and that was just one way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are other, and everybody probably has different ways, and that was one of my ways.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It wasn't about, oh, I got a message in a dream. That's not what it was. It was something entirely different than that, actually. Which also, that's fine. Message in a dream, great. That's fantastic. and that happens too.
It's good if you know how to read it, you know?
Yeah, it was. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and also like when it was happening for me was like when I was waking up. And so I know that's when I have that connection and things come in. So, you know, okay. So here's my next question. Here's all these, you know, how to live beyond all these forms. How does Anthroposophy and the Anthroposophical Society do this? Tell me, where's the Anthroposophy in this? Like if things are being held back by, forms and, or being twisted and turned, or there are forces. Like, what's your picture of Anthroposophy in this? It's 100 years now for Anthroposophy, so
yeah.
Well, it's more than 100 years, but just because somebody's going to call me out on that. But there's some big anniversaries going on right now, this year in particular. Yeah,
I mean, it's a difficult question with a lot of answers. I mean, in one way, we could say that Anthroposophy is excited to go through its meaningful death. That what's meant to happen is an assistance and an ushering into the death process, where Anthroposophy, like in some ways a person, becomes more available to us after it goes. So it doesn't go away, just like people don't go away when they die, but that it's transformative and meaningful event lends a new kind of presence and intimacy that can't exist in life support status. So there are some people for sure who are, you know, don't want to sign the paper to let it get off the machines.
Or the old forms, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one answer. And I realize that that's a controversial thing to say.
It's also fairly vague, so I don't think it'll be that controversial. No, because you're not talking about exactly what about it needs to die. I hear you saying there's a transformation, and in transformation there is death. And maybe it's more like, oh yeah, the whole thing has to crumble. But, you know, I don't know. It's up to interpretation right now.
I mean, I'm not saying it has to crumble, but, or the whole thing has to crumble or whatever. What I'm saying is that, you know, a lot of what is being asked of us right now is not necessarily outside the bounds of what Rudolf Steiner and Ida Wegman and Carl Koenig and these other sort of big figures could see, but it's out of the bounds of what they could actually actively teach in their time. And we're finding ourselves engaging with mysteries of the heart with new concepts, new perceptions of time, with radical reevaluations on so many levels. And those are mysteries given to us by the spiritual world. They're not just social conditions. So I think this is the big mistake that people make when they try to reform Anthroposophy or go into, they want to reorganize it around social problems.
Mm-hmm.
That is completely, to my mind, wrong-headed. It's not that social problems don't need to be addressed and that certain social issues need to be addressed within Anthroposophy, but this, like, I'm saying this as someone who's in the public sphere that's, you know, not a white, white old anthroposophist.
Yeah.
Although I'm getting older. But this, like, let's just do anthroposophy, but with diversity.
Yeah.
That is not appropriate. And it's not that diversity is inappropriate. It's just that that approach to revitalizing and or ushering through the transformative, meaningful death process, it's not going to do anything. All it's going to do is actually hold that process back from happening. What is given to us is to work with are real initiatives from the spiritual realm, real questions and challenges and opportunities that are being offered to us from there. And those are not social conditions. And the more people try to rally Anthroposophy around the social conditions rather than what is being revealed to us through the materialistic phenomena of social conditions, the more we're going to fail. And then it will crumble. And it will not, it won't, it'll still be lots of people practicing it. I mean, it's not just going to go away. But I think that that's a big part of it. And it leaves us in a bind in a way that I feel comfortable with, but a lot of people struggle with. People feel like they need to leave Rudolf Steiner behind, as some anthroposophical or formerly anthroposophical organizations have done. Or they feel they need to step out of their integrity and jump into the world, as you can see with certain Camp Hill communities who are asking for government money and then just falling apart. You can see it with people who give the most ridiculous answers to people's questions about their lives. Anthroposophists telling, you know, trans people, well, just wait till the next time around and then you'll be the other gender.
Yeah, right.
You know, or the other biological sex. So don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You can see this coming up in so many different ways, because it's not the task of anthroposophy to grapple with social issues in that way. It's to see the truth and to strive for the truth and to understand that the truth is living and the truth meets us, you know, the truth is the truth, but it meets us differently, and reveals different contours of itself to us. And I think because we're all trying to pursue it at once. And, you know, it's not everybody has the eyes to see every aspect of the truth. So, I mean, this is a long and sort of winding answer to your question. But it can't do what a university does. And it also can't try to do the worst thing it could do, which is the reactive opposite, you know, and turn into this like, well, you know, now we're anti-vax, anti-trans, anti-vegan, anti-all allopathic medicine, anti, you know, and just become a negative caricature of itself. You know, it's not even the double of anthroposophy. It's the double of a shitty version of anthroposophy.
Mm-hmm. You could reverse all those too. You could say like pro-vax, pro-vegan, I don't know, all those things.
Totally. Right. Totally. Yeah. I mean, it could just be all of that, right? Like it could just be, and that there you can see how it falls into this cartoonish self where it's been sucked into a certain corner of the political realm. And anthroposophy is not a political project. Politics can arise out of doing spiritual work, but that's different. Politics can arise out of the cultural realm. And the cultural realm can arise out of the right spiritual life. But that is not the same as organizing itself around political issues.
Yeah. I mean, certainly that would be horrendous if it did that.
Well, doing that, I mean, you see it in tons of anthroposophical newsletters and things people say. I mean, and this is part of getting back to what's the difference between self-development and spiritual development, you know? And we can also ask, what's the difference between community development and a spiritual development amongst people in relationship to each other, or in other words, a congregation in some sense, there's a big difference.
Yeah. Can you say a tiny bit more right there?
Yeah. I mean, like, look, I'll just call him my friend, although we haven't spent a lot of time together. Dean Spade, who is, you know, an anarchist, organizer, if that sounds funny to some people, who has done, you know, been a lawyer for trans liberation issues and also wrote a great book called Mutual Aid.
Love that book.
Which came out during the pandemic. It's incredible.
Yes. Yeah.
Mutual Aid is a way of doing political engagement, that is, how to engage with your neighbors essentially. And that can lead you into spiritual understanding because it demands creating real relationships with people.
Mm-hmm.
Versus just representative, you know, governmental forms or hoping the political authorities will save you from whatever, you know, problems you might have. But it's important to understand that the mutual aid work is not in and of itself spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
It can point you there, and therefore it's a very valuable aspect of spiritual development, but it is not in and of itself spiritual development. And I think people confuse those things. So I'm using like a positive example now because it's not all just negative in the ways in which, you know, like it's not bad to do political work. It's not bad to position yourself in relation. I mean, you can't help but do political work through, you know, just how you interact with your neighbors. You know, that has a political value because it's between two or more people and how they, share their idea of what, you know, everybody deserves, you know, in the situation equally. You know, if you have a property line with your neighbor, you have to do something political there. Because it's the political rights sphere. I should just sort of reframe that for people who don't know the pre-folding stuff.
We should have a whole conversation about that next time.
Yeah, we will.
For sure. But yeah, I mean, I think like of Waldorf schools and, you know, like people came to Rudolf Steiner or they come to these spiritual, you know, leaders and say, well, how do we repair this? Or what does this look like if it has a spiritual, you know, philosophy under it? But that's not spiritual development. That's different. That's the initiative. That's the practical work that happens with a spiritual perspective and understanding. But there's still this other spiritual realm to be working in. And that is the task, I hear you saying. That is the task of anthroposophy.
And And with Waldorf schools, like very much in this, the real spirit of Waldorf schools is not to teach kids anthroposophy.
Right.
In the same way that, you know, like the Christian Science Monitor was, you know, explicitly not supposed to have Christian Science in it. And it's not to say that it's not there. I mean, of course, if you, in the same way that like a very old style German kind of education is in every school, you know, like every public school or university or whatever, like the roots of, you know, all education have some sort of ideological basis, of course, but it's not teaching the kids that it's bringing them into an atmosphere that has been, you know, where it's sort of unfurled from a certain spiritual perspective. But I mean, so are all schools. I don't really see the difference between the two. And I'm only saying that just to say, like, I think that that's something that people get really confused about when they do like there's a lot of Waldorf critic concern, which I think is valid and worthwhile, but a lot of it is just absolute nonsense. And one of the nonsense things is the overall conflation of they're teaching anthroposophy to kids. It's like, well, some teachers probably have messed that up, but you know, by and large, that's not what's supposed to happen, and it's not what is happening.
Yeah, and I mean, it is. That's a ridiculous argument because you can go to schools where religion is being, things are being taught even more directly, and or anything is coming through very directly from the teacher. Politics are being taught, this worldview. I don't know. It's just,
what about our school? I mean, where the first girl who like came out of the closet was sent to the guidance counselor, you know, like for a psychological evaluation, and maybe, you know, or like, you know, we're taught, you know, essentially taught obedience training to the labor force.
Yeah, I mean,
that's way
absolutely
worse.
Way worse
than teaching someone, you know, like not teaching someone to read until they're seven or whatever. It's like, I mean, it's just preposterous. Like whenever I hear that these kinds of complaints about Waldorf schools, I'm like, have you ever been to a public school? Like,
yeah,
that's the big thing, is like people want to be, they don't want to stop indoctrination. They want to be the ones that indoctrinate.
Ooh.
And it's very difficult to move yourself out of that sphere. And very often we, I'm opening up a whole new can of worms, but I mean, this is a how to live beyond thing as well. Like, you know, in Ireland, there are these PSA announcements about gender-based violence that they play before movies now that the government has made. So if you go to the movie theater, the government has paid for these spots, you know, before movies, and they'll show things that, you know, some things look abnormal, some things look normal in these like recreations of things that the government is calling gender-based abuse. Some of it is like, there's a guy, you know, at a pub touching a woman on his back, on her back while he orders a drink for her. And there's, you know, a woman boss like massaging her male employee's shoulders. There's some guys like tussling over their towels in the locker room and so forth. Some of these things, if you'd see these ads, look like they could go either way. Some of them look really, you know, but the government's like zero tolerance for gender-based violence is what it says.
Wow.
And I just, the reason why I'm bringing all this up is to say, like, well, Ireland has picked up this message, and there's real good and truth and messaging around consent.
Yeah.
But it's picked up this message hot on the heels of, you know, discovering that 800 some babies were buried in a septic tank.
Right.
In tomb. And the Catholic Church telling everybody to not touch each other. And then it's considering this to be a progressive social message. How would it even know? How would it even know what is sexually appropriate or progressive, especially if it's using the same the same framework for what behavior is good and bad as the previous institutions in power? So this is what I mean when I'm saying, you know, it's like people are more concerned with who's indoctrinating than what's actually even being indoctrinated. And I think that that's, and again, it's not this isn't a total dismissal of the Catholic Church or consent messaging, but you can see very easily that it's like, who's, you know, you can see how these things work. And so this is why I'm saying this, you know, ties into how to live beyond. Like, we've got to go beyond things that are very, that seem to fit very well with what we agree with politically, culturally, and economically, spiritually, what even we say works for us, what we think, you know, is indicating truth to us. We've actually got to move beyond a lot of that. And we know, because the techniques do not work anymore, and they're not up to the challenges that we're facing or the opportunities that are being offered.
I think we can end there, and everyone should go over to Against Everyone with Connor Habib and follow, like, review your amazing podcast, and absolutely listen to this season. Because if you like this, you're going to love that even more, because it's more Connor, more Connor. And amazing guests. I just so good. Thank you for being here. Is there anything else you want to say? Just like, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure when this is going to air.
Soon, like, you know, today, maybe.
Okay.
or tomorrow.
Well, so on March 11th of 2023, if you're, depending on when you're listening to this, I'll say the year, I'm giving a course, a one-day sort of immersive course called The Mysteries of the Tarot with my friend Rachel True, who you might know as someone. So Rachel was in a sort of cult movie called The Craft, which you might have seen, which is about witchcraft. She's also an actress who's been in a show called Harlem. It's in a cult classic movie called Half-Baked. Anyway, she designed her own tarot deck, which is called the True Heart Tarot. And my friend Sarah Maria Griffin, who also is a tarot reader and is a young adult novelist. She writes fantasy novels for young adults. And we're coming together to talk about the tarot from different perspectives. I will be talking about it from, you know, sort of esoteric Christian perspective. But they'll be talking about it in their own ways. And so we'll each take, you know, 20 minutes talking about the tarot, and then we're all going to pull a card from our decks, and we each use different decks. I use the Marseille. Rachel obviously uses the deck. She designed the True Heart Intuitive Tarot deck, and Sarah will be using the Coleman Smith Rider-Waite deck. And we'll draw a card from that and create a reading out of those cards, and then talk about three different interpretations of the reading. So the idea is to show you different perspectives, different decks, and different ways to read, and to bring all those perspectives together to create an introduction to the being of the tarot, a way to bring tarot forward, a way to incorporate it and fold it into what we're doing without merely accessing old ways of understanding it. And you can sign up for that. There's a link to it on my Instagram and my website, ConnorAbib.com. And there's also, just if you just go to Eventbrite and look up the mysteries of the tarot, how and why to read the cards. And then you can also get like supplemental readings from Rachel or Sarah or I. And if you sign up now, like, I know people's money always gets thin at the end of February because it's such a quick month. So if you sign up now, there's like an early bird. It's like $175. It's like 2.5 hours long. So if you sign up now, you get like a bit off of that price for, you know, if you sign up for the readings or just the regular course. And if you sign up after March, you can still sign up after March turns over for the regular price. But it's on March 11th, which is pretty soon. Mm-hmm.
And if you're,
I've never done a tarot course before. I'm really excited. Ooh. You know, it'll be the first kind. And, you know, it's rare that a bunch of tarot readers get together and do something like this, especially someone of Rachel's stature as well, who, you know, created her own deck. It was a really beautiful deck. So, yeah.
I can't wait to go. And if you're a patron, you get a discount too.
Yeah, you get an additional discount if you're a Patreon. So patreon.com/ConnorHabib. But yeah.
Not if you're a sister, but if you're a patron. Just to clarify, I am both. And everyone else should be too, though.
Yeah, but the sister aspect cancels out the patron.
Yes, it does.
Just to pay extra.
Oh, God. Okay. It was great talking to you. Thank you. This was like really, a deep discussion. I'm like really thankful for it, as all the discussions that we have are. Okay. Thanks, Connor.
Thank you.